it an experiment because he doesn't know what's going to happen. And that's because with physical mediumship, there are a lot of different variables. And part of the one of the biggest variables are the sitters. So if sitters are there that are negative, are saying this is all magic, this can't happen, it's very skeptical, it brings the energy down and not as much can happen. And if you have very enthusiastic sitters who are very positive, it brings the energy up and a lot more can happen. So they never know what's going to happen, and I'll get more involved, talk more about that as we go along. The second man's picture you see here, his name is August Beaufort. He has written a book called Arisen, which is a very interesting but deep book. He was associated with another physical medium who has since passed over into the spirit world, so he knows a lot about physical mediumship because he sat with this man for a very long time. He also has physical energies and does sit as a physical medium sometimes. He is very interested in physical mediumship. He has been to many of Kai's seances. He traveled this summer to France, the south of France, where there's another physical group that meets and attended their seances. And he knows a lot about it. But the thing about August is he's very, very detailed. He also publishes a blog called Arisen. And in his blog, he writes reports about the seances he's been to. It's like every minute little detail is there. Stuff that I saw it, I was there, I remembered it when I read it, but if you asked me without reading it, it wouldn't have been there. So this lecture is really a combination of my experiences and an August detailed recording, because it really was quite, he's quite remarkable that way. It takes him maybe about a week or so to write all this up, but it's really incredible. So, if you're interested in this topic, with what I'm going to do, I started it this morning before the service. I'll be sending an email with the link, but I'm going to be putting a web page up on our web page of all the links to all these different things, and also these lectures will be on here too. So I wanted to mention that to you. So let me just say that unfortunately, when I arrived at the seance, my energy was not normal, and I realized that. I don't know, I was at my mother's, I don't know if she drained me, or I just didn't sleep well, or something went on, and I was there, and I knew my energy was off, and I knew that this might not be so good, you know? But I did the best I could to participate. You know, when you're in the physical science, you do a lot of singing. I came out with a horse throat, because I was singing, you know, getting as much energy as I could, but I knew that inside I wasn't vibrating where I should normally be. So we're going to start off with a definition of physical mediumship, because physical mediumship is when everyone can see the phenomena. So that's not a bad thing. If we had 100 people in this room, okay, most of them would not be psychically gifted. Most of them would not be clairvoyant. Most of them wouldn't be clairaudient. So if, like when I'm going to do messages later on, they're going to work with me through clairsentience, a little bit of clairvoyance. I'm going to see things, but other clairvoyants might be able to tune in and see them. Other clairaudients might be able to hear what I hear sometimes when I hear a few words. But in this case, with physical mediumship, everybody can see what's happening. If it was a direct voice seance, which is part of physical mediumship, two types of direct voice, one's with a trumpet, with a big cone, and a voice box is made of ectoplasm, and it speaks. Everyone can hear the voice. It's very much like years ago when the telephones first came out, there were party lines. You picked up the phone, somebody else was talking, there was a conversation going on. You could listen to it. You weren't supposed to, but you could. Okay? Well, it's very much a party line to the spirit world, and you hear everybody's messages, and you hear the voice changes from spirit to spirit. Everybody hears it, not just clairaudient people, everyone hears it. If it's independent voice, there's no trumpet. Everybody hears the voice. The voice box is just suspended in the air. It's loud enough. Everybody can hear. So the thing about physical mediumship is it provides definite proof. Because when my father spoke to me through the trumpet, I knew it was him. No doubt about it. The voice didn't sound 100% like his. But his pronunciation, his enunciation, the way he put sentences together, everything about it was him. something. Nobody can fake that. You know your own. And for me, it was only 2 years after he died. So it was a situation where, you know, everything was fresh, you know, still in my mind of how he sounded, how he would talk. So I knew it was him. There was no question. Another part of physical mediumship is materialization. Materialization is when ectoplasm comes out of the medium's body. It can form into a pillar, or what we call a pillar of cloud, and a person can form, and a voice can form, and the voice can speak. So imagine if you're at a seance and your grandmother materializes and talks to you. So you recognize the voice, but you're also seeing her. Because it will look like your grandmother. Would there be any way that you doubt that it was your grandmother? Or that it was? And if she starts to tell you information that only you knew, you wouldn't even be able to say that it's magic, it's a trick, it's whatever. So it's very, very evidential. The thing with materialization, though, that's like the crown jewel of mediumship. It's a grand phenomenon, it's the biggest point, and it's the hardest to do. So materialization comes in spectrums. It's along a spectrum. So like over here, you might just see ectoplasm, just a glob of ectoplasm. And then sometimes if there's enough energy, they sometimes form a hand, because there's not enough energy to form a whole body. Or sometimes they'll form a head. And sometimes that head could speak, but it's still not a whole body. And when you get over here, it's the full materialization. The full spirit is there. So depending on the energy of the medium and of what's being generated in the seance, it could be anywhere along that spectrum. Just like if I turn the other lights on, it's on a rheostat, bright, dim. So it all depends on the amount of energies that's there. And this is part of the reason that the mediums can never predict what's going to happen. The physical mediums can't predict, because they don't know if it'll have a full materialization, or just ectoplasm, or a partial. So that's the way it kind of works. Okay. So I arrived at where the seance was. It was in Summit, Springfield, New Jersey. It's a place I don't go to too often, so it was new territory for me. And I walked in there, and we went into this room, about three-quarters the size of this room, where we were in there, and it was like a place where we were all gathering and things. We were to arrive at 7 o'clock. We didn't leave the way after 12. So it is a long process. The first process took about 2 hours, and that was sitting in the room. Everybody gathered at a certain point, and at a certain point, the medium came in. And he started to talk to us. He, as I said, is from Frankfurt, Germany. His wife was there, who plays a major role in the seance. And he gave us a little bit of his background. The medium, he falls into a pattern that's very, happens very frequently with mediums. They were very ill as a child. Now, he didn't say he had a very high fever. I assumed that because of what he said. But he was very ill, and he left his body, and he conversed with etheric entities for the first time. That's the way he put it. At age 11, there were poltergeist activity around him. So that would mean things were being moved, things are flying around. Usually people don't get hurt in these things, but they don't understand why this is happening. And that happens to a lot of physical mediums before they start being a medium, because the energy is there, and spirit harnesses it, trying to get their attention to say what's going on. If you ever see a film, there's a film out about Matthew Manning. He became a healer, but he used to do automatic writing. He had the same phenomenon. All sorts of all the furniture in his room in the living room was moved around. Well, the family wasn't there, morning after morning after morning. So until he started doing automatic work, accidentally he started doing automatic writing, he started to channel the energy, and then that stopped happening. And he also began, we're back to Kaya now, he obsessively read about parapsychology, reincarnation, occultism, hypnosis, and spiritualism. You know, we started reading because he had a voracious appetite for knowledge. Then, at the age of 15, he started his first circle. Imagine, 15. In 2004, he founded the Felix Experimental Group. So he explained what we would experience, which I'll go into in a minute. And he also explained, he showed us some of the scars he has on his arms because people didn't follow instructions. So being a physical medium is not without danger. There's certain things that there are rules about physical mediumship, a lot more than mental. There's hardly very few for mental, but physical there's a lot, and if they get broken, it can endanger the medium's life to the point of death. The medium can die from doing this if certain things happen. So so we talked for quite a while, and part of this talking, his motivation was to get us to both blend our energies, because it was important that we, you know, our energy be blended, and that we also knew what was going to happen. Because for some people, you know, sitting in a totally pitch black room is scary. Because some people are afraid of the dark. So it was all trying to get people to kind of meld their energies and assure them what would happen so there wouldn't be any fear, because fear will bring down that psychic energy very quickly. Now, the next issue we have to talk about is the issue of fraud. Since 1848, when the Fox sisters started mediumship, they were accused of fraud. Fraud has been an issue of all mediums face, but physical mediums face it about 300 times more than mental mediums. Because people say they're faking, you're sitting in a dark room, so the medium's getting up and moving things around and making things happen and nobody can see, and so forth. So fraud has always been a very big issue. So Kai explained to us there are two types of what he called protocol about how to combat the fraud issue. One is the English way of doing it, and one, I guess, is the German way of doing it, because he doesn't follow the English way. There are books out, I think the name is The Mediumship of Robert Weber. I know the man's name was Weber. I don't remember his first name. And if you thumb through that book, you'll see a lot of pictures of a medium sitting in a chair, maybe in front of a cabinet with a group of people, and he's all tied up. There's ropes around his arms, there's ropes going around his body, and all this so that he's tied to the chair. And this was done so that people would know that he couldn't get up, move around, and make things happen in the dark. That's the way the English did it. He also said that the English, along with the Americans, took spiritualism and turned it into a religion. The Germans do not tie their mediums down. What they do is they hold the medium. So what happened is, if this was a chair for the medium, and then there were the next chair here, the next chair here, and his wife sat here, and she was like the main physical control of the seance. So there were things that had to be done, and she was the one to do it. So if she sat here, and she held on to the medium's arm and to medium's leg. And then we were sitting, well, let me show you how it was set up. So the cabinet was here. And there was also a chair here for the medium, the one for his wife, and the one for the person who owned the building. He was the other cabinet assistant. And then there were 18 chairs going around the circle here. During the circle, we all held hands. During the seance, for 98.5% of the time, everyone was holding hands. This person was holding on to Julia, this person was holding on to Howie, and they were holding on to the medium. And these people would constantly report, yes, the medium's in hold. So what was happening is, I guess there's a bit of trust here that they're holding him, they're really holding him. But being what everything else that was going on in the seance, I think that was true. The other thing too, there was times where we could see a bit, and I'll explain that later. In front of here, they placed a rubber strip, and that was for the medium to stand, and he'd know how far he could go out without going any further. He wouldn't go past the rubber strip; it was like boundary. And then here, there was a pail. Regular pail turned upside down. And this was called the focal area. And the physical energy being condensed here was focused here, and all the activity of what would happen, I shouldn't say all, some of the activity that was happening was focused right here, and things were happening here. So this was called the focus theory. So this is the way that the room was set up, and the procedure of Holt. So what happened was that they announced that we're getting ready to start the seance. That meant that Kai went into another room. He went with Howie and did a strip search of him to make sure that he didn't have any kind of foreign materials under his clothes or in his body or anything like that. Because one of the claims that were made about physical mediums is that this ectoplasm that was coming out was really cheesecloth. Some said that they would swallow the cheesecloth and then regurgitate it during the seance. This is how bizarre some of the skeptics are with their explanations of how this is done. Okay? Yeah, no, it doesn't make sense, but that's what they said during the time. So the point is that this particular medium is addressing all these issues so that we could sit there in confidence that everything was the way it should be. So he was off doing that. Once his strip search was over, he began going into a trance state. He uses some sort of breathing technique. I don't remember the exact name of it. But it was a thing that produced quite a bit of noise. He says it can be disturbing for the sitters. That's why he doesn't like to do it in front of the sitters. Although he did a little of it once he got into the cabinet, but not a lot. So it brings him to a state. August, who's also a therapist, I don't know if he's a psychiatrist, I do know he's a therapist, explained that some people in the therapeutic world do a technique called rebirthing, where somehow they also use some sort of breathing technique that is supposed to get people into altered states, and it's a very similar technique. So he was off doing that. While that was happening, we had to go through security. It was like going on an airplane. So we walked into the room. The first thing that happened was we were patted down. Why were we patted down? We could not have any metal on us. No watches, no rings, no cell phones, nothing like that, because metal can affect what happened. Then after we got done with the pat down, we were wanded like you were in the airport with a metal detector, just to make sure. Why did this happen? Remember when I said he got burns? Somebody had some metal in the room at one point. So they went to the extreme of going through to this to make sure nobody did. Because unfortunately, some people don't follow the rules when they're at seance, because they don't have an appreciation of the delicacy of this mediumship and the dangers for the medium. So then she scanned us, and then we were assigned in a specific chair, which the spirit control decided where we were to go. So we were placed, I guess, according to our energy. So then the room was, when seance was about to begin, the room was dark, and the medium came and he sat in the cabinet. He was under control already, and his spirit control began to speak. His name was Hans, and Hans had a very different accent than Kai. By the way, Kai's English is really quite good. It's very easy to understand him. You know, sometimes, especially when someone speaks German as a native language, their grammar and sentence structure is so totally different than ours that it can be difficult to understand. He was quite easy to understand. Every once in a while, there was a word there that we wouldn't say quite that way, but he was easy enough to understand. And so that was quite an accomplishment just there. So the medium was under complete control, which meant that he could walk, he could talk, he could do everything. And if the lights were on, you saw him, you wouldn't realize that it was not Kai, that it was really the spirit control using the medium's body. Again, with trance, there's many different levels of trance, and so this is on the deeper levels. They not only can use the vocal cords, they can use the whole physical body. If any of you ever have heard of Rampha in Seattle, his medium's Jay-Z Knight, he also has complete control of her. For hours, he can be in the trance. He can eat, he can drink, but it's he, not her. And he's, you know, it's a male spirit in a female body, and everybody refers to it as he, because he, when he's in the body, it's him. Voice is very different, very masculine. Tone very, very different than when she's in her control of her own body. So so that's the type of control that was here. So it was Hans that was running the seance, either giving instructions to Julia to do certain things at times, or by stamping his feet, that was also a signal to do certain things. Julia was the one who was, there was a CD player there. They played music almost the whole time. Most of it was very, very popular rock type music, and we were to sing along with it. There was also a lamp there with red light, because you know that when ectoplasm is produced, white light destroys it, but red light doesn't. So we were able to see certain things for a period of time when the red lights were on. And so that's how it was set up. So the seance began, and Hans talked to us for a little bit, and very quickly and very startlingly, it was like, wow, and how did this happen? There was a flash of light. It would be as if someone had a camera and took a flash photography. And this was produced by spirit light. And after that, there was a bunch of little lights. If I were to take a small flashlight, this room is completely black, and turn it on and start going like this, and the lights flashing all over the room, that's what it looked like. Only after a while, there were probably about 25 of these lights going around. It was a real light show. It's called spirit lights. In the Bible, the spirit lights existed at the burning bush, because in that case, the light stayed at the bush, and it looked like it was burning, but yet it wasn't burning, because it was really, it was really spirit lights there, not actual flames, and that's the vision that Moses had. We were instructed that if we saw anything, or experienced anything, we were to say it out loud. It was another way to let people know phenomena was happening in the room, because we're sitting in the dark. So people were talking about the spirit lights, and then people started to say that they felt the spirit lights, that the lights would touch them. And some people said that a touch was a smooth touch, as if a hand was caressing. And some people said that it felt like a fur coat or a piece of fur was rubbing against them, or like a cat was rubbing against them. And for some people, it was rather sharp. When it came to me, it felt like somebody really hit me. And I'm sitting there going, what's going on here? You know, it's like, I couldn't process it. I really couldn't, because it was just like, how's that happen? So, like I said, I was very focused on the book. After this, I went back to the book. I really didn't think about this too much, so I was driving to Connecticut yesterday. And I started to talk to John Samuel about it. And he's a chemist, so he knows science. My science knowledge is about that much. Okay, science and I do not really get along. And most of the time, if they tell me something, it's way over my head. So I started to ask him, how does light get produced? Because it was like, how's this happening? And he explained to me that light is produced when electrons bombard each other, hit each other, and causes some sort of energy explosion. And that when Edison created the light bulb, he found a way to make this happen on a continuous, steady basis, and that's why the light seems to glow in a light bulb. Because the spirit lights that were going around the room, that's what it was. It was a light that was going around. So we started talking about this more and more. And then I started thinking about the movie Ghost, which I'm sure all of you saw. And in the movie, Patrick Swayze's in the subway, and he meets this guy, this other spirit, and the other spirit's walking along, and he sees a tin can, he kicks it, and the tin can moves. So he was able to move physical mass, the spirit was able to move physical mass. And Patrick Swayze tries to do it, and he kicks it, and his spirit goes through the can. Because his frequency at that point was too high for the can, and it went just right through it. So he had to, the other spirit taught him how to lower his frequency. So, and again, here's where I started to theorize. There has to be a dividing line between when you're really spirit and when you're starting to get into physical matter. And when they get to be dense enough to cross that borderline, at that point, if they kick the can or try to move this, it moves. But they're not really as dense as we are. They're still way up there, but they're low. They have enough mass. They've come into the physical realm where they have a bit of mass in order to make this move. They have to. And that's why I felt this thing. Because it felt like I was hit with something. Because it got into a frequency where it started to have mass. I said, oh, this is starting to make sense to me now. Because, like I said, I didn't think about it till yesterday. But that's what it was. It's crossed the line. Because it really felt like I had, like it was hit. It was cold, it was wet, and it had substance to it, which I was going at that point, like, how's this happening? So that's what happened. Later on, the spirit lights stopped, and Julie was told to take some musical instruments and put them on top of the pail. So we broke hold for, when she gets up, everybody breaks hold, so we can let our hands down for a few minutes. She had took a little flashlight, went down. The medium's in the cabin, so the light isn't really affecting him at this point. She goes out, she puts the instruments in, she sits down, and we all hold hands again, and we start. It took a few seconds, and the instruments are playing. There was like a tambourine, and there was a drum. There was another instrument. I don't know, I was a kid, we used to have those little tiny instruments at school, you know, in elementary school. Those are the kind of things that we use. This is a very old phenomenon, back in 1851 and so, from that point. There was a medium called Daniel Douglas Home. He was Scottish. He left his mother and father very young and went to live with his aunt. I don't know why. The aunt lived in Connecticut, very close to where this church originated. Maybe within 20 miles. He lived there for a number of years and grew up there, ran into all sorts of problems with the aunt. She was quite religious and didn't believe any kind of spiritualism. He became a physical medium very quickly, and so there were problems there. He left home and he started doing seances for the rich and famous of Connecticut in those days. It didn't take him long to be famous, to be written up in the newspaper and so forth, and ended up in England. In England, he had this one seance where it's a room similar to this. From what I understand, it was on the second or third floor. The building's no longer there. I'm told one of the British mediums I know went to see if they could find it, and he said it's a car park now, or a parking lot, unfortunately. But it was a room, if this were the room that the seance took place, we have windows on this wall, there was a window on that wall. The windows were open, and he levitated. You know, he was like laying down. He went up, he went out the window on one side, around the corner, and back into the room. Which he did all kinds of things. But he also did a lot of instruments. I think in those days it was real, like a real accordion that started to play and so forth. So we can look at this and say, so what's that trying to prove? You know, well, what's the point of this? And a lot of this physical mediumship, when you get to the point, as I talked about, with full materialization, it's definitely proof of continuity of life. But we always can't get to that point. It is showing that as long as there's no fraud going on, that spirit has the capability of doing of moving physical matter. It's not the medium. He's tied up or he's being held over there. But yet spirit is creating this phenomenon. It's a way to prove their existence again to non-gifted people. The next thing that happened was Hans said, okay, enough of that, and we're going to do, going to play with ping pong balls. Obviously, they weren't around in the 1850s. So there had been some ping pong balls that were painted with phosphorus paint. So Julia came, got the ping pong balls, put them on top of the pail, took the light and shined it so it would energize the phosphorus for about half a minute or so, went back to her seat, we all joined hands, started singing, and the ping pong balls suddenly went pop over here, pop over there, pop over here. So let's say one ended up by your foot, and one ended up by your foot, and one ended up by your foot. So, and some people said they could see like a shadowy thing. I kind of saw that too. There was like kind of a, how would I say it, a blackness that was there for a little bit. I couldn't say there was a hand, but I could see. Some said they could see a bit of a hand there. I couldn't from where I was. So Hans said, okay, let's do it again. So again, she went in and she didn't use the lights this time. She just got the ping pong balls, put them back on the pail. We sat down again. Almost instantaneously, boom, the ping pong balls moved. They went to the exact same spots they were the last time. The exact same spots.
Oh my gosh.
So that again is showing intelligence. The spirit world is always intelligent, even though you might say how intelligent is to play a tambourine. When this continues enough, you start to realize there's an intelligence there. Okay? And if you think about it, when these lights came and hit me in the face over here, they didn't hit me hard enough to hurt me. They didn't hit me hard enough, they didn't hit me so my glasses flew. I wasn't hurt by it at all. Okay, so there was enough control there of what they were doing, even though this thing's speeding around like crazy, to not hurt anybody. So after we finished with the ping pong balls, Hans announced we had a visitor. And then we heard footsteps. We could really hear the footsteps. And all of a sudden, it was August. He said, he's stepping on my foot! And started laughing. Now, obviously, he didn't stomp on his foot to hurt him, but enough pressure to kind of let him know he was there. Again, showing the intelligence of it. So we heard footsteps for a little bit, and then it kind of left. Then Hans told us we were going to use a reflective panel. This was a piece of cardboard about this big that was painted with phosphorus. And it was placed on top of the pail. And and people said they saw a hand materialize. Now, I was sitting right here. The pill was right here. I didn't see it. I tried as hard as I could. I couldn't see it. People over here all saw it. People along here were having a hard time seeing it. Why? I don't know. August did make an observation. He said as he scanned the circle, there was a section of the circle whose auric fields weren't as bright as everybody else's. And again, when he said that, I said, yeah, I'm not feeling like I should be. I'm probably one of them. I didn't see that much. I didn't see that much of the hands, of the materialization. And which I found disappointing, but a lot of other people saw it. So when we say that everybody can see the phenomena, apparently that's a little bit of a myth. Even though, it's hard for me to say that, but somehow, I wouldn't say it didn't happen. I'm just saying I didn't see it, for whatever reason. For either because of my energy or my position. So apparently where you are makes a difference as far as where you're seeing it. And it was the same thing with being touched. There were some people who claimed they weren't touched at all. Some people who were touched like 15, 20 times. I was touched about 3-4 times. But I can't, I have no explanation, but all I seemed to think it had something to do with either the sitter's mindset or their energy that day. that it wasn't as high as some other people's. He made that conclusion later. And he has enough knowledge to make a conclusion like that, and I would respect that opinion, because he really understands this in great depth. We were then told the visitor returned. And this time, a little hard to explain. It was almost to me like a green, phosphorus, cloudy glow that I saw. Other people said it looked like a snake. They described it even as a cobra. I didn't see it that detailed, but I did see a greenish mist. I can attest to that. But I couldn't see the formation of it, which was the theme of the night for me. I wasn't seeing the formations, but I was sensing something. So I drifted around the room for a while. And then every once in a while, there'd be these bursts of lights. No warning, just like the flash bulbs are going off. And the independent lights whizzing around the rooms happened a couple of times. And then we had a trumpet demonstration. I had never seen a trumpet like this, but I have heard of them, but I never saw them. But the trumpet was about that high. It was made out of cardboard. It was painted black, and it had a few phosphorus boxes on it, so you could see it falling around. And what happened was, I think the medium under control either tossed it or kicked it in from here into the circle. And we were told to count to 5 to 0. And to see what would happen. So we counted, everybody counted 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. Nothing happened. We were told to do it again. We did it again, nothing happened. He said, count from 10 to 0. Oh, and we were also supposed to squeeze our hands. I forgot about that. We were supposed to squeeze our hands when we got to 0. Somehow that was supposed to increase the energy that was flowing through us. So we did it from 10 to 0, and all of a sudden that trumpet took off and started flying all over the room. Like crazy. Now, I had seen that before. I had seen 3 trumpets fly around the room, you know. So for me, that wasn't like, oh my God, wow. It was like, oh good, it's happening, you know. That was something else. And to see 3 of them going, 3 distinct, very different patterns, just all over the place. This trumpet did not speak, unfortunately. It just flew around the room for a while and showed us that. Yeah, I don't think it even touched anybody, but it did do the flying several times. That stopped, and we went into the ectoplasm part of the seance. This time, Kai went into the cabinet and shut the curtain. And Hans explained that when he stomped his foot, that Julia was to turn the light on and have the curtain open the curtain so we could see what was going on. And so we sit there, and the curtain opens, and there's Kai sitting there. And the thing is, when Carl explained to me materialization, okay, we'll go to the manuscripts of Transfiguration, when Jesus did materialization. He was up there with his 3 students, Peter, James, and John, and Carl said they withdrew energy from the students as well as Jesus, and these pillars of cloud formed, you know, the ectoplasm left the medium, the pillars of cloud formed, and Moses and Elijah spoke to Jesus about his departure. So it was full materialization, you know, the best you could have. Happening. That was always his explanation. It didn't really work that way, which is kind of, this is what surprised me so much. When you could hear, even before he opened the curtain, but let me just say, before I say that, ectoplasm has to come out of the body. So it has to come out of an opening. So either it comes out of the nose, or it comes out of the mouth, or it comes out of the openings that are in the lower part of the body. And I will ask him out.
Yeah.
Okay. When we were sitting there, we started to hear vomiting sounds. Now, I always thought this was a silent process. It was coming out of his throat, and he was kind of vomiting it out. And they opened it up, and you see this stuff coming out of his mouth. You see it, it's just like this. And they close the curtain again, and he does a little bit more of the vomiting and stuff and so forth. It was kind of different than I expected. I just expected this nice, quiet process. Well, it wasn't quiet.
Now,
I brought this jar for a reason. By the time he finished producing the ectoplasm, the ectoplasm was about the mass of this jar up to here. I don't think it had this that high as a cern. So from here to here, it was about that tall and about this wide. It was more boxy than round. But this is the closest thing I could have that approximated the size of what I perceived the size was. So if it was cheesecloth, that some people say ectoplasm is, he would have to have swallowed this much stuff, which wouldn't even fit in a human stomach. Okay, that's why I brought this, so you can really appreciate the size of it. Now, many people said that this massive ectoplasm produced a hand that came up. I kind of saw like a column come up. I didn't see the whole hand, but I did kind of see something happening, high, but I didn't see. I think part of it's my nearsightedness, even though I wear glasses and stuff, and in the dark, I was way over here, this was happening like right in front of the cabinet there. Maybe if I was closer, I was seeing more, I don't know. But I do know that it did come up at one point, somewhat. But other people said they saw a full hand come up. That was the most surprising thing to me, was the noise. It wasn't a quiet process. Let me read to you what some of the explanation here. The other thing that was really impressed me about the seance was the spirit control, because there was a lot of times he stopped and taught stuff. He was a teaching medium. He would teach what was going on. Unfortunately for me, the words that he was saying wasn't always forming stuff in my mind. It was like I wasn't retaining it. And I spoke to the medium afterwards, and I asked, because I knew there was a recording being made of it, and I asked him if I could have a copy. And he agreed to it. So he said, since you attended the seance, yes, I'll give you a copy. But he was still traveling in the U.S., and I haven't emailed him yet, but I'll be doing that this weekend. Because I want to hear more of what the spirit control said, because I'll read part of it, because August has part of it here. But to me, I read it, and I don't get it. So he explained the ectoplasm stuff. Hans said that ectoplasm is an artifact resulting as a side effect of the chemists attempting to cross-breed two different dimensional realities. To me, that's as clear as mud. He also referred to it during several sittings as something that received the chemist's information and which then mirrored it as a form and movement. It was also information from our own dreams and subconscious images that could also be mirrored by beginning ectoplasmic energies and then be drawn back to us with bumps and caresses. We on Earth are projections of this higher into lower dimension. We don't usually realize this consciously. Spirit does consciously exist in an informational dimension. He is often reserved to himself and his spirit team as of the informational. Yeah, I see a lot of puzzled looks on your faces. I've been in this work for a very long time. And I worked with Carl for many, many years. And we worked on many different projects back in the late 70s. We started doing golden thread dealing with psychic phenomena in the Bible. And from time to time, I would have Carl go into trance, and I would get to ask Spirit how things worked. And when it came to materialization, I was repeatedly told, you do not have the capacity to understand what happens. I said, tell me what the chemists do. You do not have the capacity to understand what happens. So here I got an explanation.
I don't
get it. To me, it's like, huh? It's just me. But, you know, maybe a more scientific person who understands quantum physics and all that stuff can read this and make some sense of it. For me, I can't. You know, that's part of the reason I didn't remember too much of what he said, because it was like continuously over his head, but I was fascinated by it, because it was the first time any spirit attempted to explain something, even though I wasn't quite getting it. The other thing I need to talk about is the A course. At some point in the seance, Hans said that asked for the youngest person to come forward, and there was some girl there, young woman, probably 17, 19, in that range, I don't remember the exact age. And she was told to come and sit like right here in the center. And she did. And she was told to cup her hands. And the medium came out and stood in front of her. Again, this is more or less in the dark, so we have to take their word. And all of a sudden, there was supposed to be something that came and fell into her hand. Well, it didn't. It fell on the floor, for whatever reason. And it turned out to be a little statue of I think it's a Buddha. It's in your program. So an A-port, again, is where something comes into existence in the seance room that wasn't there before. Remember, the seance room was thoroughly searched, so it wasn't there. And spirit is able, is very much like Star Trek, where beaming up Scotty, you go from one place to the other, they would take a body, well, here is an object. They dematerialize it from one place and materialize it back in the seance room. And that's called an A-port. There's something called an A-port, where there's something in the seance room, and it's the same thing, and then it disappears out of the seance room, that's an A-port. So it's the opposite of an A-port. So there were two A-ports during the seance. They're both here. And one was a stone. The stone was supposed to be a healing stone for someone who was sick, and he was supposed to be at the service, but he wasn't feeling well enough to be there. So, but spirit produced that for him. And so there were the two A-courts that also took place at the seance. So after the ectoplasm demonstration, the seance kind of came to a close. Kai came out of his trance rather quickly, I thought. It was quite, you know, being in such a deep state, he came out, and let me see how this worked. Yeah, we stayed there, and he was taken out of the room, escorted out of the room to one of the other, probably the room we was in the beginning where he first went into trance. And then we were to leave the room and go back to the room that we were in the beginning. So we were there for a while. They had some food there for us, because at that point, it was probably close to 11-ish, 11:30-ish. And we were told not to eat much before the seance, because that also affects things. So we had some food there, and eventually Kai came in. He seemed pretty much his regular self. He didn't seem like he was exhausted or anything, which sometimes happens when they produce ectoplasm and things. And that's kind of what happened. Now, one thing I wanted to go back to. Those spirit lights that came and hit me on the cheek. We were given specific instructions not to touch it. Apparently at one of the seances, when the spirit light came to the person grabbed a hold of it. And when they did, that's when Kai got the scar on his arm. So that kind of really brought the seance to down for quite a bit. I don't know if he was able to continue or not. He didn't specify. But someone grabbed a hold of it. Because you have to understand that I'm not sure if this is ectoplasm that's flying around that we're seeing, but it's definitely linked to his energy. His energy is a source for this. And by someone physically touching it, and holding on to it, they're changing the frequency of whatever that thing's vibrating on, which is kind of like pulling the plug, giving you a punch in the arm or something like this, but it actually burned them. You know, there would be a physical reaction to the medium. This is why I said there's very strict rules about this. There's a very famous materialization medium called Helen Duncan. She was British, I think, or Scottish, I'm not sure. She was in the UK. And she, but she worked in England, but she was Scottish. She was working in England. And there was a lot of things about accusing her of fraud and this and that. And at one time she had a seance and the spirit materialized, and it was of a soldier, a sailor. It was from the Navy. It was a sailor who had just died in the war, and it hadn't been announced that the ship had been sunk. But it was before it was announced by the government. And he explained what happened to everybody and so forth. And word got out, and the government was not pleased with the media because they were letting out state secrets during a war period. So this was bad. So she was doing a seance, and they raided the place. And they nearly killed her because they put light on, and you know, and that is detrimental when there's ectoplasm like this. So that she died. Actually, she died about a week or so afterwards after that happened. There was other times, and I know two cases of this, with Helen Duncan and a British medium called Gordon Higginson. There was also the materialization medium. And you know, the ectoplasm goes out, and just like I said, that this big mass was on the floor. Well, if there's any dirt or anything on the floor, or a pin or something, when that gets back into the body, the pin ends up in their stomach, in their body, and causes them, you know, pain. And that happened both to Helen Duncan and Gordon Higgins one time. These things ended up in their body because the way this works. So there's lots of precautions that have to be maintained. So like I said, afterwards we talked a lot, we exchanged experiences. I got to talk to August a lot. He was the one that I told him I was a little bit disappointed. I didn't see the hands and stuff and so forth. And but overall, it was a very positive experience. And it was the first time I ever saw ectoplasm in all the years that I've been talking about it, but I never really got to see it because there's very few physical mediums around. And part of the reason for that is, in order to develop this, I know of a medium in England. Some of you might have heard of him, Stephen Upton. He goes regularly to the Burning Within Church. When I saw him, maybe about 5 or 6 years ago in England, he said at that point he was sitting for 18 years once a week, and he was just starting to have certain phenomena happen. It was aport, so it hadn't quite fully aport. It started to appear, but didn't quite totally form. And that's 18 years of work, week after week after week. So it takes a lot of dedication to develop this. And not everybody wants to turn the TV off and make room in their life continuously. And the thing is, you just can't do it yourself either. For a physical mediumship, you have to have other people there. You just can't sit in the cabinet by yourself and make things happen, you know, and do it. There has to be at least one other person, and preferably two or three, in order to be there to help supply the energy, because what is actually happening in the beginning stages is that they take the energy from the sitters and use, help use it for the medium, because usually the medium doesn't have enough energy. And I did forget to say that when Kai first came into the room before the seance, I noticed a shift in energy right away in the room. And you know, I often claim I don't feel much. So it must have been very strong for me to sense it. I definitely sensed his presence. So, and a physical medium does have that kind of quality, that their energy is there. Now, lots of people have, I shouldn't say that, but not every medium can be a physical medium. Carl could not be a physical medium if he didn't have physical energy. There's a certain quality within one's energy that allows them to do physical phenomena. I was told a long time ago, I have that energy in me, but I never really sat for any extended period of time to develop. I did for a short period of time, but then it stopped. So it would take, you know, years and years of sitting to make this happen with people. So that's why it's so rare. So the fact that I got to witness this at all, I felt very privileged. Any questions? Yes?
Okay,
the picture that I sent out, especially the one in red light, that was not the seance I was at. I didn't see that. There's a person called Shannon Taggart. She's a professional photographer who has an interest in this, and she attends a lot of physical seances. She's the one who sent me an email about the seance. I met up with her. There's you know how there's Facebook? There's a Facebook for physical mediumship, a separate website. And that's how I connected with some of these mediums and stuff. So it's like you can find out where these seances are and stuff. Well, whether you can attend or not, you'd have to, you know, look into it. But those are her pictures. And she has, if you go on her website, she has a lot of photographs of Lilydale and seances and things like that. And that's, I borrowed that. It was funny. I was doing a search. I just chuckled when it happened. I was doing some sort of search about something. About physical mediumship. I go on this website, and lo and behold, there's a picture I took of a trumpet, because it's in my book. You know, so people swipe pictures all the time. They're not supposed to be pictures, but I just chuckled when I saw it. And that was that. But what I'll be doing is posting a page of physical mediumship. I'll include Sharon's books. I haven't thought about that, but I will do that. So, because you can see some of her photography.
So your father came through with a message?
Yes, not at the seance.
Oh.
This was a trumpet seance I was at back in, he died in 83, 84, 85. It was 2 years later. Yes, he and I talked. And it was through a different trumpet medium. In that seance, again, it was complete darkness. Didn't see any ectoplasm, but those trumpets had bands of rings around the trumpets. Mm-hmm. And there was three trumpets there, and they all flew around in three different patterns. And he came to speak. And Carl was there at that time. Like, remember, Carl's a clairvoyant. So he's sitting there, and he says, because he had told me this a little bit before the seance, he said, I see your father here with his two brothers, because two of them were in the spirit world at the time. My father didn't believe in spiritualism at all. He said, all mediums are fake. Harry Houdini proved it. Boom, done, finished, that was it. So, and I kept trying to tell him what would happen, because he had cancer at the time, and what would happen, and this and that and the other. And when he transitioned, didn't want to hear about any of it. If you're dead, you're dead, and that's it. So, he said, your father and his two brothers are running. It was at Camp Chesterfield in Indiana, very similar to Lilydale, but it's in Indiana. And they do a lot of physical mediumship there. Well, they have certain physical mediums. And he said, they're running around from house to house, and your father's shaking his head saying, this can't be. So then during the seance, he says, your father's here. And they're hooking him up, and they're telling him to speak as if it was a telephone. And then, as trumpet seance also has a master of ceremonies, so there's a certain spirit that introduces who's going to be speaking to the trumpet. Mm-hmm. And so the master of ceremonies says, we have, the trumpet's coming to you, Sydney, and it came to me. He said, we have someone here for you. And I hear, hello. And it's exactly the same way my father said. I said, hi, and we started talking. So, I don't remember all the details of the conversation. I do remember the end. I said, so tell me, Dad, you used to say when you're dead, you're dead. Have you changed your mind yet? And just like that, he said, some people have to live and learn, and some people have to die to learn.
Wow.
I mean, instantaneous. Not a hesitation. Yeah. And since that point, you know, he comes around and this and that. It totally changed his whole perspective. My grandmother was very similar. That happened probably a day or two before. We were sitting in the cafeteria, and Carl says, I see your grandmother here. She's waiting outside for someone to open the door for her. She doesn't realize she can walk through the door. And I said, yeah, well, that sounds right. And something must have shifted in a few minutes. He said, did her kitchen face a brick wall? I said, yeah, it was an apartment building in Brooklyn, and there was a brick wall outside. She says, I see her throwing all her pots and pans against the brick wall. Because she realizes that keeping kosher was a waste of time. and I said, well, I guess we're shaking up the Jewish part of heaven, you know. which there was, because there was a shift after that, and she also comes through very often. So I think they realized that, you know, watching what I was doing and experiencing, they must have realized that the way they were taught wasn't really valid and made an adjustment. So that's what happened. And they both died within 10 days of each other, my grandmother and my father. So,
did any messages come through at this one, this seance?
No, it wasn't a message to ants, unfortunately. There were no messages. It was just the physical phenomena. Now, if it had gotten to the point where it was a full materialization with the speaking spirit, someone would have gotten a message, you know. And in that case, most of the time, the spirit that materializes is a relative of someone in the room, you know, one of the sitters. So that it's really, because it's the highest form of evidence you can have, as I said before. So that's what I heard. And again, I had an interesting experience because I had planned to go see Kai in Lilydale on September 11th. And someone mentioned to me that he really wasn't, quote, legit. And the source of this was coming from British medias. So when he started talking about the protocol, which I was totally not aware of, I said, oh, this is where this doubt's coming from. Because the English wouldn't accept the way he's doing it, they're not doing using this method. You know, they've not got control. And so it was interesting. But the thing is, there's no way you could fake the spirit lights. Okay? There's no way I would have felt a touch. So the phenomenon that was happening that I experienced was, I know, was real. I didn't get to see the full materialization that everybody did for whatever reason, either an angle or my energy or whatever. And I didn't realize that that would be part of it, because the way I was taught, everybody sees the phenomenon. Well, not necessarily, apparently. So, it was real. It had to be real. It couldn't have been faked. We were all holding hands. The other thing that they added a new control, which is also interesting, was that Julia, who was holding the medium, sang for the whole thing. So if they could turn the music off, she was still singing softly. So we would know where she was. So to help, again, to the claim that, you know, it's not fraud, so we know, and she was holding the medium. So they really did their utmost to combat the idea of fraud. Any other questions? Yes?
More of a play the devil's advocate.
Sure.
What about if there was about three or five, I mean, you didn't know each other.
Right.
Three or four people there that are planted to say, now everybody around is, oh, yeah, I saw that. And there's only a couple of people, the truer people, mm-hmm. who will say, I didn't see that.
I guess it's a possibility. But you have to trust some of it somehow. I know that the reporter and the researcher had never been to one of Kai's seances. And the one that was screaming quite often, because she was touched and screamed, you know, quite often, literally screamed, blood-curdling screams, which I found it a little, but it might have increased the energy, you know. It's energy, you know, and it was genuine. So it was like, you know, there was another guy there from Florida who was a bit, I would call him off the wall, way too enthusiastic as far as I'm concerned. But he's building energy, you know. But he comes off like a bit of a flake because he's so to the extreme, you know. Yeah, come on, show me your energy, you know, all that stuff. It's positive, but it's, you know, I mean, sometimes it might be a little, even the haunts, the control at one point said, you're an interesting sitter, you know, because he was a little bit too much, but he, you know, he's contributing to the energy. I don't think, one of the people that did see it was some of the new people, and I don't think they would go along with being a plant. I do know that. I do know that the one from Canada, the researcher, definitely saw it. She was the screamer, and that saw the hands. But she was sitting more like right here. August was here. She was sitting like there, so she had a much different angle than I did this way. And of course the distance from it too might have something to do with it, perhaps. I don't know. But I definitely saw ectoplasm. I definitely saw stuff. I just didn't see it totally formed. Yes?
I saw him last year.
Okay.
Did they do the white handkerchief? Did they have the dancing handkerchief?
Not that I remember, no.
And at mine, they didn't do the youngest person, go forward.
Well, is it similar to your, in your case? Did you see, how much of materialization did you see?
I saw a hand.
Did see a hand, good.
I did see a hand.
Mm-hmm.
And I sat about where you sat. But I think the room is too big for it to maintain the energy. And people mostly, though, closest to, felt, you know, hands on their shoulders, felt things and stuff like that. But I did see all the lights and the horn and the tambourine being played.
Mm-hmm.
All that was the same.
The same, yes.
Yeah. Now, you know, to have your wife, that's kind of right there. Oh, is she being convinced?
Mm-hmm.
You know, the wife is part of it. But, you know, I don't know. And who was sitting next to the wife? Did they know the wife? And would they have let go of her so she could get up and do anything?
No, that was one of, it was one of the sitters. I don't think so.
What would they want? You're also.
Yeah,
but
right.
I don't know if she knew.
Yeah.
When I went, I don't know if they knew each other.
I see. Right.
He would come out of the cabinet going, I think it just literally slid in and out on his chair. But yeah, it's different. It was an experience. I mean,
yeah.
Amazing. The guy from Florida, do you remember his name?
Pardon me?
The guy from Florida, did you know his name?
No, I don't remember his name.
Gus?
Because he was also in Florida in June. I also thought about that, and then I found out he was going to be in Lilydale. I said, that's easy to get to. Then I kind of decided not to go. And then when this came up in Springfield, I said, oh, this thing's too close not to go.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's when I got my point to experience. Yes?
At all seances, do they have a cabinet in that same position?
From what I understand, yes, for physical seances. Well, I shouldn't say all. Most trumpet mediums use a cabinet, but when I went to see Bill English, the one I was talking about, when my father spoke, there was no cabinet. It was a smaller room that was completely black, and he didn't use a cabinet, but it was in pitch blackness, which part of what's needed. The cabinet is actually used to condense the energy. So in other words, so the energy just doesn't go out and dissipate, it like builds up. It's kind of like if I took a jar and I had a cigarette and I put it in there, all the smoke would end up being in the thing and getting thicker and thicker and thicker and thicker and thicker and thicker. And that's kind of what the principle of the cabinet is. Say, and when it gets thick enough, then it can be manipulated by the chemist and to do all this.
Nothing touched me. And it wasn't, at my sense, no light, no, they just felt hands touching them. It was with the light up in the air. I felt hands on their shoulders.
Yeah.
Their feet, their knees.
That also happened, by the way. Now that you brought it up, there was a time when that was happening, where there was no lights and you were being touched.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I was touched then, but I was touched when the lights were flashed.
Did you see that? It wasn't coming out.
No, you didn't. It was already out when she shined the light on it. It was already out. And that photographer was there.
Okay.
And asked permission, and Hans said no, no pictures. But she had taken them the night before at Lilydale.
Mm-hmm.
And she posted them like that.
Wow, the woman photographer.
It's quite interesting because the spirit controls, and this is communication with the chemist, and they know when it's okay to take pictures and when it's not okay. It all because every time the energy is a little bit different, and if it's just, you know, if the energy's not just perfect, they won't do it. Just like I know with the silver bell seances, there was times when they were allowed to touch the ectoplasm, but the preparations had to be made for that to happen, and that they actually put a blood pressure cuff on the spirit's hand. And it was already on the mediums. And they compared blood pressures, and it was different. Their heart rates were different, and stuff like that. But they just couldn't go do that. The spirit has to say it's okay for that to happen, so it doesn't hurt the medium.
How can you bring a camera? A camera has metal in it. It's mostly metal.
good question.
Well, we said on metal chairs too, so.
Yeah, so I bet that seems contradictory. Metal chairs, metal camera.
I was just curious.
I think they're
very sensitive to cell phones because they don't want people taking pictures. Because that will disturb the energy.
Okay.
You know, unless it's okay, unless
but like you couldn't have your watch or your ring.
I didn't have my watch or ring on. We weren't allowed to have that on. Yeah, I don't know. But aren't
watches they ask you
to
take
off
even with
Reiki
too?
Pardon?
I'm sorry. I don't know if this is a lot to do. A sitter could then say, oh, look at this app port. They gave me a ring.
That's true.
So if they made sure you had no jewelry on it, then you can't claim and check your pocket.
Yeah.
That's a good point. And cameras these days are a lot more plastic than they are metal, I think.
I don't know.
The good ones, you know, I think.
Were they metal chairs?
I think they were plastic.
They could have been plastic, yeah. I think
more plastic than
remember
metal.
Remember for sure.
Yeah, I don't either.
Sounds so interesting.
Yeah. It was definitely an interesting experience.
What did they do with the apple? Did they give it to someone or take it or keep it?
The girl got to keep it. We're going to bring this discussion to a close.